excitations.
Yeah. So first of all, thank you so much for the invitation. It's pretty nice to be here. And it's very weird for me to be here because I don't know nothing about dark matter. And I'm here because this guy, Molecura. I'm a molecular guy. I do theory with molecules, atoms, and so on. That's what I do for a living. Come on. And as you can see, laptops are against me, but doesn't matter. So this is a very interesting collaboration between, with Harry, Ruben here in the audience, Harry is also here in the audience, and Eden, he is an experimentalist in Stony Brook. So far I have been here listening to wonderful talks, but for me, I mean, when you do AMO, everything that people talk about materials, you say, okay, this is too much crap, too much problems. Because materials are complicated. Molecules for us is a more cleaner system, right? But even though it's kind of cleaner, still we're going to see that we have a lot of problems too. So our approach is kind of a little bit different from the previous speakers and something similar to one talk that we had yesterday. So my talk is going to be pretty simple, 2 points. First of all, I will try to convince you that people like me, we can have a job in a dark matter place, I don't know. And the second is try to convince you that maybe our approach can work. That's it, pretty simple. So let's start. So if it works, so here is the wonderful picture that I took from this cosmic vision paper that I know thanks to Ruben, otherwise I would never see this paper, you know. So anyway, I don't know too much about this, but it seems that you guys now, with all this WIMP stuff happening, nothing, you don't see nothing here. So now you want to move to low mass, right? So you are trying to find dark matter no matter what, right? So you want to go there, see what happens. So turns out that molecules and atoms, of course, when I say molecules, I also mean atoms, is my field of expertise, let's say, covers this range of mass. That seems to be very interesting for you guys, okay? For me, I don't care. I just put a molecule, honestly, I mean, we put a molecule, okay, you can tell me which energy you need, I can find a molecule that has the same energy and see what happens. That's what I do. So you give me an energy, I will give you a molecule. That's how it works. Then what you do with the molecule is your business, not mine. Up to you. This is a free country, right? So then it sounds that molecules can be very interesting. So, but of course, I should explain also a little bit what is a molecule, otherwise I will feel bad. So yesterday we had a very nice explanation of what is a molecule. So usually people draw molecules like this, right? So two balls and one stick. So this is the simple molecule that you can have. No, that, honestly, this is very, very realistic. Well, no, okay. So this is how it really look like the potential energy curves of H2, for instance. It's the second simplest molecule. The simplest molecule is H2 plus, two protons and one electron. This is the simplest molecule that you can have. But H2 is supposed to be the second simplest molecule. And what we have here is, as we saw yesterday in the talk, what happened in molecules, electrons and nuclei, they have a very different speed. So electrons move super fast because they are very light compared with the nuclei. So then how we do things in my field is we fix the distance between the nuclei, because if you're moving so fast and you're looking at something that's most slow, you don't see nothing. So you see like the gas is always fixed in time. So what we do is we fix the nuclei and we calculate what is the energy of the electrons. So let's assume that we go to 3 Bohr and we see what is the energy of the electrons and we get points. Then we repeat this for different distance and we get these curves. And each of these curves at very long distance, because a molecule at the end is just a bound state between atoms, right? So if you separate the atoms far away to the infinity, the energy has to be the energy of the atoms. So what you have here is, this is when the two hydrogen atoms go to the 1s state of hydrogen. And this guy here is when one of them go to the 2s state of hydrogen. Too simple, right? So this is how it works. And something interesting about molecules, that I like more than atoms, of course, is because it has, apart from electrons, electronic degrees of freedom, where the kind of energy is 1 to 10 eV and can be interesting for you guys too, is because we have vibrational and rotational degrees of freedom. Indeed, I would like to show you how look like the electrons. This is an orbital of H2. So, because usually you always show the nuclei, but you never care about electrons. I have to say that chemical binding and everything like that is coming from electrons. Electrons make things stick together and allow us to be alive. Otherwise, life will never exist. So electrons are very good friends of us. So that's the message. And this is how it looks like, one of the orbitals, but also we can have orbitals like this, can so fancy, right? You guys like to have fancy pictures, so that's the reason I put this. Doesn't have any other meaning. Yeah, honestly. So, okay, so the energy range for electronic excitation is from 1 to 10 eV, right? So you say, okay, I want to go lower. Yeah, can we? Yeah, sure. Sure, we can. We can by looking at the vibrations of a molecule. And this is the bound states calculation for H2. In our case, we don't have any Morse potential, any approximation. This is just pure solving the pure numerical problem, solving the Schrödinger equation. So we take the Schrödinger equation, we solve numerically. This is what we do. We don't. In my field, people don't like to do analytics too much because we have the way of thinking is, if we can do something with a computer and it's exact, why should I care about analytics, right? So we do everything with a computer, so that's what I do. And sometimes we do some analytics, at least in my case. So everything is numerics here. And this is how it looks like the wave function square, of course, of the bound states. And the energy here, as you can see here, is quite broad. The reason why we can have such a broad energy difference is because it depends on the mass of the molecules. The lighter the molecule, the bigger this energy separation is. The heavier the atoms that the molecule are formed, the energy is smaller. For instance, if you go to cesium-2, cesium is a very heavy guy, this energy can be around 10 to minus 2 eV. And this can be good for you guys if you want to study this light dark matter candidates. And also on top of that, we have rotational states, but I'm not going to talk too much about them today. So I think that this is maybe one of the first paper, or the first paper, I don't want to, you know, to do something wrong and people get pissed off with me, where someone start to think about maybe atoms and molecules can be interesting for you guys to detect these wonderful dark matter particles. And what's interesting is if we are interested in attending experiments with nucleons and so on, we can see that playing with the kind of energy gap that we want to cover in the molecule, we can study different mass. And for instance, in the particular case of the vibrational motion of a molecule, we can study mega EV mass dark matter. And it seems that that should be a big thing for you guys, right? So then we get excited and say, yeah, let's study molecules. But also, apart from that, I have to mention this work, that this is the reason why I started to collaborate with Ruben and Harry. I read this paper, it was nice, but I found a lot of kind of things I can do better because, you know, these guys did great, but you can do better. So then I start to talk with them, and then I don't know why I get involved in this madness to find dark matter particles. So now I'm supposed to find dark matter particles too. So that's what I do now. But this paper is interesting because it's kind of the very first paper or one of the first papers that tell the people, okay, molecules maybe is not crazy at all. So you can use molecules or cluster of molecules, if you want to think it that way, to detect dark matter particles. So maybe that's is interesting. So another work, and to mention is this work that was also mentioned yesterday, I believe, by Oren, where it was a kind of the application of chemical reactions. So it's how to detect molecules through breaking a chemical bond, but in a crystal, and they got really nice results. Also, I have to mention this paper here, where this guy, I don't know him, but nice. So in this paper, the guy had the idea, a very nice idea of, I mean, he didn't do any kind of very realistic simulation, but the idea was there to say, okay, if something hits a ground state molecule, it's going to get excited and something is going to emit, so it's going to emit something, right? Some kind of photon, right? So then you have a signal, you can detect that something can perturb your ground state, and you can see, okay, I have my dark matter. Okay, but we will see that it's not that simple. We have to work quite a lot. And of course, this wonderful paper, where they did absorption, and the results are pretty amazing, and I like it quite a lot. In particular, the stack configuration, where they make use of the coherent properties of the light to enhance the signal. So this is a pretty nice paper. I recommend you to read. Kind of long, I have to say, but anyway. I mean, less pages will be nicer, but okay. Everyone, it seems that you guys like to write long papers. So. Okay, good. So now let's start to talk about serious stuff. No, I was trying to be funny, but now let's try to be serious. So our approach is going to be pretty, pretty simple. So as I say, we like simple systems. We don't like to complicate our lives more than they already are. They are complicated. So our approach is, let's have a molecular gas When I say molecular gas, it's always in gas. Of course, we never want liquids and solids, all that kind of stuff. We hate that. Those are so complicated. We want gas, right? A molecular gas. And we are going to put the gas surrounded by photon detectors that I'm going to assume that they detect the photon, whatever. I don't know, I'm not going to talk about dark counts that you like, you guys love dark counts. I don't know why it's so important, but yeah, it's, well, I know why it's so important. But in my case, let's assume that I'm not going to talk about that. Okay. So then what happens is a dark matter collides with the molecule, then the molecule gets excited. When the molecule de-excites, it means a photon, and hopefully we will detect the photon. Okay, pretty simple. Pretty straightforward. So let's see how this simple picture complicates your life like crazy. First of all, in order to see whether this can work or not, in principle, this approach works for any kind of molecule that you can imagine. Here, I'm talking about diatomics, but in principle, you can use, I know, benzene, whatever kind of crazy molecule, proteins, whatever. Of course, the more complicated the molecule, the more complicated is the analysis and the theory that you have to develop to calculate the scattering properties. So that's the trade-off. But in our case, we are doing diatomic molecules, and in order to see whether this can work or not, we have to follow, I mean, we have to take care of only 4 points. Pretty simple, right? Let's start with the first one. The first one is the emission, spontaneous emission rate. So the idea of having these 4 points is following these 4 points. We are going to kind of imagine that we have all the molecules of the universe, right? With two atoms, there are so many. So what we want is to reduce the spectra to see what are the best molecules for us, okay? So using the spontaneous emission rate, what we have, just looking at this, is if we have a homonuclear molecule, the spontaneous emission rate is super, super small. So that means the lifetime of the photon is going to be super long. The reason why is because it doesn't have a permanent dipole moment. So then when it decays, it's going to decay through an E2 transition or quadrupolar out transition. And this is really small. But if we have a heteronuclear molecule that has a dipole moment, things change, and then we have the typical dipolar out transitions. Those are pretty fast. And that's the reason why this guy is better. So by looking at this, so there is a difference of 10 to the 8 order, 10 to the 8 of different, right? So then this means that we should work with heteronuclear molecules, because otherwise, if we have an experiment and we hit one of these molecules, we will wait like, I don't know, 1 year to have one photon, and that's not good for us. But of course, choosing heteronuclear molecule, yeah.
You're talking about spontaneous emission rates out of the electronic
state. No, vibronic.
Vibration.
Yeah, vibration. Okay. Yeah, this is vibration. Now here is, we are always in the ground state. We are not going to any electronic state. Everything is in the ground state. In the single sigma state, indeed, all the molecules that we are working, since they are single sigma molecules. So of course, now we have to work with heteronuclears. But with heteronuclears, we have to pay a price. Always we have to pay something, right? Nothing is free. So black body radiation is one of the problems. But the black body radiation that I'm going to talk, I have noticed that you guys think in black body radiation a different way as we do. So you guys, if I understood well, is like the photons that you have floating around from the different material that you have at a given temperature can mess up with your photon detector and going to give you a signal, right? That was my understanding. Here, what I'm going to talk about is how these photons can mess up with your molecule, but also mess up your molecule. So that's what I call black body radiation. And also, I will talk about collisional rates. If you have a dipole moment, then collisional rates are faster. And we will see that it's going to induce some problems. So let's go to the second point, thermal population. Well, in our case, we want to have, I mean, we prefer to have all the guys in the ground states, right? So have a number of Avogadro number of molecules, everything in the equal zero state. In order to do that, by looking at the variation partitional function, the only thing that we need is the temperature has to be low, of course, and we always need molecules where the omega is big. So what we prefer is molecules where this energy difference is the larger that we can get. The larger, the better, because then this ratio goes to zero faster. And then we don't have any guy in the equal one, equal two state, I cannot mess up with our signal, okay? So then the message from the second point is, okay, from the first point we have heteronuclear, second point we need lighter molecules or molecules with a big energy separation. Good. Point three, black body radiation. Again, my black body radiation here means a photon, so it's like, imagine that you do have the gas surrounded by, I don't know, things at 300 Kelvin, right? Room temperature, these things emit photons. And that photons, what can induce is an excitation. So even though when you have all your guys in the ground state, still these photons can excite the molecule. And this is what I call here the black body radiation rate. And it turns out that this guy depends on the type of matrix element between these two guys here and the variational frequency. The variational frequency, again, is the energy gap, or the energy difference between the V plus 0, V plus 1 guy. So by looking at that, again, we prefer lighter molecules or large variational spacing, as in point 2. Good. Also, we will prefer to have molecules with a small dipole moment in order to reduce this. But the most important factor, of course, is always this guy here, because it's in the exponential factor. And of course, the lower the temperature, it's always better. So again, it seems that if we want to use molecules, we have to go to low temperatures and molecules that they have a dipole moment, and they are far away. The energy between V equals 0 and V equals 1 is as large as we can. OK. So here is just to show you the kind of molecule that we can use. And here I have water. I'm not using water. Water is so complicated. Well, but this is just to show you that, for instance, if we try to apply this kind of idea to a molecule with three atoms, what happens is, if you think in a diatomic is something like that, right? So it only has one way of vibrating, only vibrates like that, right? But if you have a trimer, then you have three different ways of vibration. Each different mode of vibration has a different energy. And these are the three different energies. So what you gain by using these molecules is, with one single molecule, you have more energies to explore, because you don't have only one way of vibration, you have three, for instance, in water. And also here we have the dipole moment in device. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to check something that is clear from here, but just to show you more or less, to give you a flavor of how it looks like the black body radiation rate. So I'm going to calculate these guys for CO and for HCl. They're kind of similar, so they are single sigma molecules, and you can see the HCl has a bigger energy difference between V equals 0 and V equals 1, and larger dipole moment. So if we compute that, this is what we get. So usually, when I work with molecules, as long as the black body radiation rate is smaller than the spontaneous emission rate, we are safe. Okay, so we don't care. I say, well, we are good, so we don't go to 300 Kelvin and we are safe. But in our case, if we want to have like 10 to the 23 molecules during 1 year, even that small difference can induce so many events, so many fake events. And we want to avoid that, right? So again, the message of this guy is telling you we need to go to very low temperatures in order to have small number of events. Otherwise, you will have a super large background coming from these black body radiation photons that are going to mess up your system. So now we move to the last point, is the collisional de-excitation. Because as I say at the beginning, what we want is something collides the molecule, gets excited, and we want to detect the photon. But if this guy collides with a ground state molecule, it can decay through a collisional process, and that doesn't emit nothing. So maybe you are detecting dark matter and you know it, right? And that's bad. So then we found this paper thanks to Ken. I have to say he used this paper as in his paper. And by looking at this vibrational quenching time that can be fitted by this expression, and I have to say that this is our experimental data, of course, but of course, this is from the 60s. I have to say that people are not very interested in that anymore. So I don't know why. So it turns out that CO seems to be a very good candidate, because now we understand why, but CO shows a very long collisional time. And this is pretty good for us, because what we want is the guy to take almost forever to collide in order to have the photon emitted and detected, right? So then it seems that CO has a very good, it seems to be a great candidate for us. So we are going to stick to CO and see what happens and see what we can do. And by doing that, let's calculate the black body radiation rate and for CO. And we see that we need to go to 40 Kelvin in order to have one single event per year. So we're going to have one fake event per year if we work with CO at 40 Kelvin and assuming 10 grams of CO. Okay, that's what this calculation says. So then we have the first bound. First bound is we need to have CO at 40 Kelvin. Okay, now let's move to the population. So it turns out that at 40 Kelvin, all the guys are going to be in the V equals 0 state, for 10 to the 23 molecules because the probability is very low. And also we have the problem, well, the problem is something that we need to take care of, is for a 40 Kelvin, that is this yellow line, many rotational states are going to be populated, right? So you are not going to be in the raw vibrational ground state. You are in the vibrational ground state, but not in the rotational one. So what we are going to do when we calculate this from factors that we saw yesterday is to take into account the Boltzmann factors. That's it. So we have a thermal population of the rotational states. So we use that to go to the average state and see what we get. And by doing that, now we can move to this kind of cartoon where another problem happens. So now we know the temperature, we can calculate the pressure and everything, but still we have a problem. The problem is when the photon gets emitted, it still can be absorbed by other molecules because that photon has to resonate with the levels of the other molecule, right? So then you can emit a photon and the other guy can absorb, right? So then you lose the signal again, so again problems. So what we have to do is calculate the photon mean free path. And in this case, it turns out that at 40 Kelvin, the mean free path is 0.4 millimeters. But of course, we are aiming to have something big. It's like 2 meter side cube. This is big, right? So 2 meters is too huge compared with 0.4. So then you will say, okay, your guy's going to be absorbed, you are done, go home, I don't know what the hell are you doing here. Yeah, that's what we thought at the very beginning, but then turns out that in the same way that the photon can be absorbed, the photon is going to be emitted, right? So then what you have to think, this is what we are thinking as a 3D Brownian particle. So you have, can imagine, you have a sphere, something happening in the center of the sphere, and you want to see how many events, random walk events, you are going to have before you reach a given distance. It turns out that the number of events, number of collisions, whatever you want to call it, depends in this way, where this is the size, this is the radius of your sphere, in our case, the size of our cube, and this lambda is the mean free path. So in order to be sure that that the photon is going to reach the detector, what we need to ensure is the vibrational quenching is going to be way smaller than this ratio, where this is the spontaneous emission rate. So it turns out that this ratio has to be to 10 to the minus 8, 10 to the minus 7. So we need something really, really slow in order to be sure that these things work. And of course, that ratio depends on the size of your tank. But the size of your tank gives you the number of targets that you have. And the number of targets gives you the probability to find the dark matter, right? So we have to always to find the best scenario for us. So then using the same paper again, this is experimental data these guys did. So we were looking at, okay, how long, I mean, what is the typical collisional time or collisional deoxidation time for CO? That is the parameter or the magnitude that we're interested in. So then we found this experimental data, and as you see, they are at very high energies. We're talking about 40 Kelvin, and these guys are on 1,000 Kelvin. Well, still, we can do something, and I have to say that these guys, these are based on this experimental data and also based in a Landau theory that's supposed to work in high energy temperatures or high energy collision. Of course, high energy here is room temperature, not your high energy, okay? Your high energy is super high energy for us. That's the point I want to make. Then, in principle, if as long as this guy was smaller than the spontaneous emission rate, you should be fine, right? But we saw before, in the slide before, that we need like a 10 to the 8. So we need to go very low temperatures in order to be sure that this ratio is the right one. So then we can extrapolate that, right, to lower temperatures. And again, we compare with the spontaneous emission rate. And in principle, you would say, well, this is for CO in helium and this is CO in CO. This is our case. So you can say, well, here we have like 15 orders of magnitude, so okay, we are safe. But something happened. We need to be sure that this extrapolation is not crazy because this is just based on this experimental data. Then we found this paper from Roman Krenz where they have this realistic quantum scattering calculation. Okay, so I trust this quite a lot. And turns out that there is some deviations between the extrapolation and the more realistic quantum scattering calculation. This deviation is like 3-4 orders of magnitude. So then, of course, I have to say that we don't have, there's no any CO-CO calculation. I'm going to do that, but it will take several months. I'm working on that right now. So in principle, we believe that even when this guy level off, still we have a chance that this ratio is going to be that like around here. Yeah, please.
What was the red and blue one CO?
The blue, this one,
yes.
Is CO in CO.
In the red one?
CO in helium.
why do you think that you're not going to have the same measure?
I will have the same level of, I'm pretty sure of that, because it doesn't make any physical sense. Yeah. But what we don't know is where this is going to happen.
Can Roman just calculate it?
No, Roman doesn't, no. I can do it, but I have the potential surface. I have to do to run the code. It just takes time and it's boring. So yeah, I will do it. Yeah, it's nothing. It's always to run the same thing. But yeah, maybe I can ask him if he wants to do it. I will do it. It's not so hard. So finally, we get to the result. So we're assuming that we have a 2 meters cube tank, okay, side, and then with that, we have these results for the cross section. And we cover up interesting mass range, I believe, for you guys, right? And compared with other experiments, other kind of things that have been done, so we can explore a very interesting part of the parameter space. Of course, we can do the same for, instead of have this, we can assume an ultralight mediator and we have something like that. And again, we have kind of a very decent portion of the parameter space to explore. And the same for a heavy dark photon mediator, where, again, we have some place, some room to maybe explore, if it works, of course. So with that, I just want to sum up and say summary and say that one of my messages to tell you guys that maybe AMOR physics has something to do with you guys, and maybe we can work on something crazy, because here everything is crazy. That's my perspective, so it's nice. And it seems that molecular excitation can work, seems to be okay if we control everything. That's hopefully we are doing. And of course, we can be sensitive to an interesting range of mass that you guys love to find something there. And now I love to that too. So finally, something that I want to mention future work is the COCO scattering properties. I know why people in my field never interested, never did COCO. I don't know why, that's life, I guess. And also we have like a kind of a plan B approach, is instead to use kind of the photon coming up from the side state, what we prefer is to kind of force the system to ionize. So what we are going to do is, when the guy is in a given state, what we can do is a RMP, resonance enhanced multiphoton ionization method, where you create an ion. The problem with this approach is the Raman scattering will kill you. But if we use a dark state, that is an interference, so what we're going to do is use another laser that introduces an interference between this guy and that guy, then the light is going to be, the system is going to be transparent to that light and no Raman effect is going to happen. So we can ionize the guy without producing Raman effect. So this is something that we are exploring right now. This is something from quantum optics, very fancy. And that's all. Thank you, guys.
Great. Thanks a lot for this interesting talk. So any questions?
I'm trying to understand then exactly how you're making it a broadband detection. So you're not doing absorption. It's essentially the scattering. So mm-hmm. The dark matter scatters off your molecules and imparts enough energy to excite the first vibrational state.
Mm-hmm.
So you just consider the excitation of the first vibrational state.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it's you're sensitive to the energies between the which would be energy deposition equivalent to the vibration difference mm-hmm. between the second and the first vibrational state. Then
no, between the V1 0 V1 1, not energy gap.
Okay, between the 0 and 1.
Mm-hmm.
But you still need to excite the 1 though.
The one is excited through the dark matter collision.
Okay, but so can you go back to your plots, exclusion plots? Any one of those. Okay, so what actually the limits which you have from about, you know, somewhere in the middle of the, you know, so what actually defines this band?
This
right.
is the velocity distribution of the dark mass.
Excuse
right?
Me?
The velocity distribution, right?
So it's just
believe.
The velocity distribution.
Yeah, I think so, because this is just for the momentum transfer, right? Well, the energy that you can transfer. So what we have is the energy between V equals 0, V equals 1 is 0.25 eV or something like that, right? So then as a function of the velocity distribution of the dark matter particles, so you have different masses in and so on. That's what that's my understanding. Maybe Ruben has something to say about
so
that.
I'm sure that's why, so this is not about six orders of magnitude.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
So the threshold of that, that's determined by the
vibration.
Yeah, yeah, the 0.20
so
something.
Okay. Yes, 0.25 eV, the threshold.
Okay, so
and so that's about an MeV, a little bit less. Right. So it has to be at least that high.
Just the velocity distribution,
Right, so at high masses, right now we haven't taken into account other possible excitations to high energies. So, that, so then they actually doesn't want to go just to the vehicle to one state, it wants to go to the other states as well, okay. Which in principle it can do, we just haven't included in that, mm-hmm. in this calculation.
We didn't do it here, but we have
why
calculation.
Why can't you do it then continue that way if you actually...
For that way, we're going to go. That way we can, well, we can if we do a kind of a spin flip transitions, but that's a different business. We're not looking at that, yeah.
Always get that sharp rise.
Yeah.
That's just the distribution of dark matter particles.
Okay.
Velocities in the halo.
Thank you.
Can I ask, since according to Mike, it's very fascinating, but if you don't see anything, of course you're going to put a bound as you show here.
Or maybe
if you do see
wrong.
Something, how do you know it's not something else, like a passing cosmic ray muon or something, I don't know.
That's a very good question. That's something that Ruben told me. Someone's going to ask you that. So, and he told me that, but he did not give me the answer. So now I have to make up something, right? Yeah, now I have to say, yeah, maybe, you know, some quantum interference. No, honestly.
Have there been any studies of molecules kept in the dark, underground, whatever, to see what the...
No, that's the best of my knowledge. So that's something that we need to take care of, how cosmic rays can fade, how... relative decays, because as some of the speakers say, it's impossible to avoid that, right? So that's something that we have to take care of. Yeah, you're right.
So maybe you mentioned it, but what is the vapor pressure of carbon monoxide at 40 Kelvin?
0.1 millibar.
0.1.
Yeah, it's like 2 orders of magnitude lower than your paper. Yeah, because you are at 100 Kelvin, right?
Yeah.
So we have 40 Kelvin, so this is an exponential.
I was wondering, maybe you covered this. You know the relaxation time scale from the vibrational at that temperature?
Okay, so you are talking about the experimental data?
Yeah, if you know, a gamma ray scatters in there, and there's some time scale for it to vibrationally relax.
Gamma rays colliding with the guy and gets excited?
Yeah.
We can calculate that, but I didn't.
I'm just wondering if there are measurements of the relaxation time scale.
The
vibrational relaxation can be pretty long.
I don't know, but this is a very good point.
Because then higher energy events will, like in, Matt talked about with things dribbling out over time, it's an issue. If there are high energy events, then if those vibrationally excite the CO, then that can show up as smaller things later.
Yeah, that's a good point. We didn't think about how gamma rays can excite the molecule. But in principle, yeah, there is a chance, for sure.
Well, I mean, if you make a track, you'll get all sorts of crap.
Yeah.
In fact, just if you have some of the uniforms absorbed, if you have just UV absorption to the high electronic levels, then you'll have actually relaxation through quite a number of different different channels.
Yeah.
And because everything with KSK down, that's the problem with molecules, because you're going to populate essentially all of the levels.
Yeah, that's totally true, but we think that we can kind of shield the system from that, because that's a very high energy photon, and the temperature that we are, that is accounted in the black body radiation. So we are accounting that too. So when we do that, what we have is we count all the frequencies, and we run and we say, okay, what is the probability for this one, that one, and that one? And we don't see any, for that energies, the exponential factor is zero almost, because the energy difference between the energy that you need and the temperature is huge. So I think that low temperature help us to suppress that. That will be a problem at room temperature maybe, but we're gonna do nothing at room temperature.
Just a comment to follow up on Dan's comment. So the excitation probability for a muon or a beta electron or a gamma ray to excite one of those levels is pretty small, precisely because he's working at 0.1 millibar. So not every radioactive event or not every cosmic will excite a transition.
Yeah, when it does, what happens? And that's
so you would have to veto radioactive and cosmic. So,
No, it decays
through a photon, right? 0.1 seconds later. So if your radioactive rate or cosmic rate is lower than 10 hertz, you can do a timing window.
Yeah, I can show you here the time. That's photon emission rate for CO.
Okay, just a very simple question. So have you considered to use some heavy element molecules that you gain a little bit by the coherent scattering, but you lose a little bit by the energy transfer rate?
Yeah, for instance, I used to do ultra-cold physics, so there people use like cesium-2, KRB, and weird molecules like that. But the problem is all these heavy molecules are really hard to have it for free in nature. So people build those molecules in the lab through different methods, and the density that they reach is very low. And that would be a problem for us. But also we are thinking maybe that we can go to a super heavy, like, I know, dysprosium, erbium, something like that. And again, it has to be done with laser, and the densities are not good enough for us.
Okay, any more questions? So if no more questions, thanks to all the speakers this morning again. Okay, so I think we'll come together at 2 o'clock this afternoon.